Good afternoon, and welcome to Who the People Radio. This is Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff.
I sound like I have a wool hat pulled down over my head.
Oh, there we go. Well, she just broke
and
the...
I broke something.
She's breaking stuff.
All right, I've only been here 30 seconds and I broke something.
Yeah, so what are we doing today?
Oh, hey, listen to that. I can hear you now.
Yeah.
Well, we're hearing from you about our sponsor.
Yes.
Less than 25 seconds ago, you reminded me to let you do that part.
Hit
it, Bill!
I am kind of like the faux engineer on this thing, you know.
You are.
Yeah. Hey, so our sponsor today is Pape Machinery, and Pape Machinery is our brand new John Deere Ag and Turf dealer here in the Redding area. They're located at 3119 Twinview Boulevard in Shasta Lake City. And they do everything John Deere as far as ag and turf. So if you want a lawn tractor, a zero-turn mower, you want a compact tractor, all the way up to the 5000 series tractor.
How do you mow your whole grass if it's a zero-turn mower?
Oh, because it spins on itself. I mean, you don't need any room at all to turn those around.
You can go straight.
You can go fast, too.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Very speedy. But, yeah, go by and see the folks there at Pape Machinery. Their phone number is 226-9226, and you can get them on the web at papemachinery.com. So go talk to the guys over there. They've got some big inventory right now, so now's the time to go upgrade your machines.
Yeah, but you're just talking about tractors. We live in California. What would be the most important thing people might need?
It's when you come into California, you buy a home, the first thing you do, you know, a lot of people, first thing they do is they go buy a lawnmower or, you know, whatever. In California, you buy a generator. It's very important that you have a generator because here in California, we don't have electricity that we can count on. It's going to get shut off for long periods of time. So go buy Pape Machinery and buy yourself a generator. They got lots on hand, everything from 1,000-watt to 10,000-watt generators, from little portable units to units that will run your whole house.
Do you get a discount if you cry in the lobby?
No, but it is permitted if you want to cry because they're out of a
particular
model. Yeah, you can cry in the lobby, and that's okay.
However, it doesn't turn into – those tears do not become cash.
No.
Darn it.
They do not translate into any sort of discount. Thanks for bringing that up.
Yeah, just thought I'd check.
Pape Machinery.
All right.
Yeah, there we go.
She wants us to talk louder. Wow. Okay. I'm 58 years old. No one has ever asked me to talk louder.
No. You have been called Ethel Merman at times. But
shut up. That was just my neighbors.
Mammy.
You've got a voice like Ethel Merman. It's like, oh, thanks for that. You could tell I was old. I actually knew who she was.
Yeah.
Okay, so do we have Dr. Pry on so that, you know, because obviously our part of the program's over. But our guest today is very, very timely. He's always timely, but this time he's more timely than usual. Dr. Peter Vincent Pry is the Executive Director of the Task Force on National and Homeland Security and Director of the U.S. Nuclear Strategy Forum. God, having a little problem wrapping my lips around that. Both congressional advisory boards, and he served on the EMP Commission and the Congressional Strategic Posture Commission, House Armed Services Committee, and the CIA. He's the author of Apocalypse Unknown, The Struggle to Protect America from an Electromagnetic Pulse Catastrophe and Electric Armageddon. So you can experience Electric Armageddon just like California, or you can read about it in the book and then figure out how we're going to avoid that, because I got to tell you, all joking aside, it isn't pretty.
No.
I mean, it isn't pretty.
No, we're the test pattern for that.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah, come to California during a blackout and
And Dr. Pry has written
happens.
An article called California Wildfires, Object Lesson for National Grid Security. And we thought, gee, what a timely article.
Yeah.
I'm not even sure if it's actually officially been published. So if you'd like to read it, it's at wethepeopleradio.us. Kind of forgot to give you that part. And an archive of this program will be posted free for your use after the show goes up. So anyway, there's no reason not to share this with a friend. Dr. Pry?
Yes.
I didn't even send you a note. I didn't even send you a note about daylight savings because I'm like, he'll know.
Of course he'll know.
We've gotten busted on it a couple times, but I figured you would know.
Well, I did know.
Of course
and
you did.
The article will be published in the Washington Times in the newspaper tomorrow. It might be online today. I'm not sure.
Oh, cool.
It's it's co-authored with my boss on the EMP Commission, Dr. William Graham, who had been Ronald Reagan's science advisor, and another one of my previous bosses and good friends, Jim Woolsey, Ambassador Jim Woolsey, who was the director of the CIA. And one might be wondering about what do California wildfires and the rolling blackouts have to do with national security? Obviously, the people who are enduring this and going through this in California understand what it has to do with their personal security and their state and the security within their state. But it seems to me, with all the coverage that this has been getting in the press and in the newspapers, nobody has drawn the obvious conclusions about what this has the larger implications for national security.
No, that's a great point. I'm glad we're talking about that, because nobody has mentioned that.
Well, actually, I mean, a lot of people have figured out that since the world has sort of moved away from landlines, that if they don't have cell service, they don't have any personal security. If they have a medical event, I mean, they're on their own.
Mm-hmm. But we do smoke signals in California. We're getting really good at that.
Yeah, the problem is they're so big you can't read them. So what made you? I'm sure you've been watching this for a while, and I'm not sure really where you want to start on this. But we've got 3 minutes till our first break. So why don't you have at it and give folks kind of an overview of what we're going to be doing today?
Let me give the implications it has for national security is that California has become an object lesson. And the fact that the way the U.S. government plans to protect our national electric grid and our other life-sustaining critical infrastructures won't work, because that plan that the Department of Energy and the Department of Homeland Security are responsible for implementing depends upon working with and partnering with and trusting the electric utilities and the regulatory agencies in the U.S. government, like the U.S. Federal Energy Regulatory Commission and North American Electric Reliability Corporation, and that obviously doesn't work.
No.
You know, these people, it hasn't worked in California for such simple and obvious public safety measures as making sure power line towers are not so old and decrepit that they won't be toppled in high winds. And it doesn't work because of vegetation management is a very obvious, common-sense thing.
Make sure
that the power lines are not going to be downed by an old tree that falls on them, and they're not even competent to do that. So how do we expect the utilities and their regulatory agencies to perform when it comes to much more complicated and much larger existential threats to the United States, like EMP and cyber warfare? They can't be trusted to do it. The EMP Commission, on which I served for 17 years, in their report warned that they can't be trusted to do it, and the proof of that is available for all to see on television every evening in terms of what's going on in California right now.
Yeah, and it also shows, the after effect when they don't do their job. Here we are, hundreds of thousands of people without power for days and days, and the aftermath of that.
Yes, well, the consequences in California are relatively minor compared to what would happen
with
a natural EMP or a nuclear EMP effect. We only have 3 minutes, so I thought I'd just give a quick overview.
Oh, but then we have tons of time after that.
Yeah, but the main threats we're worried about, are not power lines down by wildfires, but something like an EMP that could kill 90% of the American people through starvation, disease, and societal collapse if the electric grid is not adequately protected. Do you want to trust these bozos to protect the grid against something like EMP or cyber warfare when they can't even do their jobs on vegetation management and basic safety precautions that are just common sense things that anybody should be able to see, but they're too corrupt and too greedy to even do that? And it's not just the utilities that are to blame, but later we can get into it when we have time, is the government of California, with its fixation on green energy and combating climate change. It's also a model for where we will go in the future if the Democrat Party has its way and wants to make climate change the, the big existential threat against which we are protecting.
Because right, because that is the big threat, right?
In California.
Yeah.
The big threat. That's the big threat. And unfortunately, I think that they're not, they're just not realizing what the big threat is. But I do think that people who live in cities who realized that they do have some services, but they can't go to work because their businesses are not open, and so they're not going to get paychecks. I mean, there's a whole lot of fallout from this PG&E shutdown. All righty, so we will chat about that, I am sure. There we go. We're experimenting with the new music thing. I have my finger on the button. For the first time in 10 years, my finger is on the button.
I'm scared.
We'll be right back. Our guest is Dr. Peter Pry, and you're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. They want you all body and soul. Then it's just your body. Then they go. What shall we do about them? What do they want? What should we do about them?
Another runner in the night, blinded by the light, wrapped up like a douche. Another runner in the night.
And we're back. You're listening to We the People Radio. We're here with our guest, Dr. Peter Pry, and we're talking about the situation with California and the power outages and how that relates to our national power grid and the implications for national security. So, most specifically, I guess, what would you say to people that are whose, you know, hair is on fire about this whole thing and they really want to do something? Is there anything for the public to do at this point?
Oh, sure. There's a lot that the public can do. For one thing, you know, they can, I would encourage people to write to President Trump or send him emails or Twitter or however people communicate on these matters these days and thank him for signing on March 26th of this year his executive order on EMP to protect our national electric grid from EMP. And it basically is an excellent executive order intended to implement the recommendations of the EMP Commission, the recommendations that scientists and intelligence officers and strategists have been trying to get in place to protect our nation for 20 years, and President Trump finally signed that executive order. But at the same time, I would ask him in these communications to please also follow the EMP Commission recommendations, in terms of how it is to be implemented, because no executive order. An executive order is only as good as those who are going to be implementing it. And unfortunately, sure, just like with so many of President Trump's plans, like building the wall, you know, he's encountering, he probably is not even aware of the resistance that's coming from the deep state, the business-as-usual attitudes. His National Security Council staff, and we all know from just the recent history that his NSC staff has a lot of untrustworthy people working for it who are not loyal to the president and are not interested in advancing the president's agenda, on whether it's on Ukraine or other issues, trying to undermine him. But somehow the National Security Council staff got the idea in its head that it would be a good idea to have President Trump's EMP executive order implemented by people, bureaucrats who are working on the Department of Energy and the Department of Homeland Security, people who are Obama holdovers, people who are members of the deep state, who have spent their professional careers obstructing national EMP preparedness, saying EMP isn't that big of a threat, saying that the risk of an EMP is so low that we should give it very low priority or ignore it completely. How do it doesn't make sense.
I don't really understand that, and I've never
had an attitude in their whole in their professional lives who worked in the Obama administration, for example, are going to give the enthusiasm and energy and honesty that's necessary to implement the president's EMP executive order. And that's exactly, you know, what's happening. We've got an excellent executive order, but it's being slow-rolled and sabotaged by implementation by people who don't believe in the executive order.
Why? What's the big mystery with EMP?
What I'm suggesting, because you said what's one of the things the grassroots can do, people listening to the show can write to the president, they should write to their senators, write to their congressmen, and praise the president for the EMP executive order, but beg him to put different people in charge of its implementation, real experts, people who understand the EMP threat.
That makes sense. Why? The thing that has never made any sense to me, though, is why anybody would say that EMP or power grid failure of any kind, whether it's something from the sun or it's a cyber, it's a cyber warfare, maybe cuts it off, or tons of different reasons. But why would they think that's just never going to happen?
Well, you don't understand the reason for that. Okay, well, that's because you live in California, probably a part of California, where people have common sense and logic tends to prevail.
The last stronghold.
You know, you have to live and have worked inside the Beltway in Washington, D.C., you know, to understand how these things happen. For example, let's use a different analogy, take a different case. You know, who would imagine that the federal regulatory agencies and their relationship with the airlines, after years of regulatory effort and thinking of through different threat scenarios, you know, would have resisted putting a lock that costs about $1.50 on the door in an airliner, okay, to prevent terrorists from getting access to the cabin so that they could take over the airplanes and then fly them into skyscrapers and kill 30,000 Americans. One would think that such a thing would be impossible. It's just such common sense to do that, you know, but they didn't do it, okay? Or, you know, that's one example of how the people's business doesn't get done in Washington. On even very basic common sense national security kinds of things. And there's reasons for this, there are several reasons for it. One reason is there's a personality type that works in Washington, your typical deep stater. People don't get fired for making mistakes. Do you know nobody got fired from the intelligence community or from any of those federal or regulatory agencies who screwed up and created the conditions that enabled the terrorists to kill 3,000 Americans? Nobody got fired. In fact, the people responsible for that actually got promoted, even after such a disaster. And so when you constantly get promoted and you can't get fired, you know, there's a phenomenon in human nature. You always want to believe that you deserve the money you get, the plaudits you get for the high-ranking position you may have as an official in DHS or DOE, that you're right about these things. Okay, even though you've screwed up, you know, you never get punished for it, and so you don't really think it's a screw-up. So there's that personality type. You call that inertia, bureaucratic inertia. We know what we're doing. We've always done it this way. We're going to keep doing it. We know what's important. I never heard of EMP. I never heard of cyber warfare. I never heard of somebody taking a rifle and shooting at a transformer. These are weird things that I've never heard of before. And it's not what I want to focus on. I want to do what I was doing yesterday. You know, that's the easiest thing for me. It requires the least energy and the least effort. These other problems force me to think creatively, and I don't want to do that. Besides, I don't have to because I'm the smartest guy in the room. You know, I've gotten all these promotions. I've been here for years. So bureaucratic inertia, that's one problem. Another problem is dishonesty and greed. You know, the regulatory agencies, like, take a look at the commissioners on the U.S. Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. You know, there's nine of them. These nine people are basically responsible for the security of the U.S. electric grid. And if you look into their backgrounds, every single one of them is a lawyer or a lobbyist who has worked for the electric power industry. And they have come from the electric power industry. And when they're done as commissioners, they're going to go back working for the electric power industry. In political science, I think the phrase is regulatory capture. When you are able to infiltrate your own people, you know, into a regulatory agency, you basically take it over. And so that's why the U.S. FERC basically never does anything and has ignored the EMP Commission recommendations. You know, if the U.S. FERC had listened to the EMP Commission reports, Dr. Graham and I went in and we briefed the U.S. FERC. They never did anything. That's why the president had to write an EMP executive order to kick butt in the U.S. government to get them to do something. So that's another problem, you know, greed and corruption, you know, which is why they haven't done anything, because of this rotating door. And then I guess the last big factor is ideology. You know, you have a lot of Obama holdovers. The Obama administration was, you know, very radical in its views toward things. And EMP was a politically incorrect threat under the Obama administration. And why is that? Because the Obama had two big foreign policy goals. You know, one of them was a world without nuclear weapons. You know, the Obama administration wanted to convince itself that through a process, if the United States did not modernize its nuclear forces and through a process of negotiation, you know, we could lead by example and convince other countries to give up nuclear weapons, including countries like North Korea or Iran, who had nascent nuclear weapon programs. And part of this narrative, crucial to this narrative, was the idea that a small or even one nuclear weapon, a small nuclear weapon program, doesn't buy you much, that you can't do much with that, that in order to compete with the United States or pose a significant threat to the United States, you would have to build, you know, hundreds of nuclear weapons and have a sophisticated nuclear arsenal like that of the United States. And so since they'd never be able to catch up with us, it just makes sense that from their point of view, that it's realistic to achieve, that you could realistically achieve a world without nuclear weapons by the U.S. leading by example and through endless negotiations. But EMP kicks that narrative into a cocked hat because you only need one nuclear weapon to bring a nation like the United States to its knees with an EMP attack. And therefore, a single Iranian nuclear weapon or a single North Korean nuclear weapon poses an existential threat to us. And they would have every reason to want to acquire that, despite the disparity in the numbers. The other part of the problem, you know, from the Obama administration point of view, from an ideological point of view, was the other big goal they had was the Joint Conference of Plan of Action, or the Iran nuclear deal. And it had that same argument there, that even though Iran, according to their own estimates, was a year away from the bomb, only 1 year away at most, that didn't matter much because they would still only be able to acquire a small number of nuclear weapons. And that wouldn't pose much of a threat to us.
But small, you know, and nuclear in the same sentence can't cancel each other out there. We have to take a really quick break, and we're going to come back. Let's stick on that Iran nuclear deal, because there were lots of things wrong with that. And I think we have a huge segment of our population that didn't understand it and doesn't understand why it was a problem. You are listening to We the People. We will be right back with our guest, Dr. Peter Pry. our guest, Dr. Peter Pry. Okay, so back to Iran. Because that really seemed like a bad plan. But there were just a lot of people, and still are, that thought that was going to solve everything.
Yes. Before we go to Iran.
Oh, okay.
If I could. I apologize for taking up the whole of the last segment with my response. But you asked an excellent question about why hasn't Washington done anything about this.
Right.
And I thought it deserved a comprehensive answer. And my response was that, there are multiple reasons why inside the Beltway Washington is unable to deal with threats like EMP, and they include bureaucratic inertia and corruption and ideology. And an additional important ideological factor in the Obama administration, particularly, that made EMP a politically incorrect threat, is they didn't want EMP competing with climate change as the big existential threat to the United States, especially because the solutions to EMP go so contrary to the green energy agenda. You know, the EMP Commission assessment finds that sources of electricity like hydropower and nuclear and coal, which are the sources of most of our electricity, and natural gas, you know, these carbon-based and nuclear isn't carbon-based, but coal and natural gas are, that these are the most resilient forms of energy to EMP and cyber attack, and therefore we should encourage them. This is sort of thing should be proliferated and grown and not limited and restricted.
What about hydro? Because we have so much hydro here in Northern California.
I started with hydro. Hydro is number one in terms of being your most resilient and best form of energy from a national security standpoint.
But they just hate it because it puts a dam in a river, and then we get back to it's all about the fish, which it never is.
And the green energy guys want to get rid of all of that.
Mm-hmm.
And so EMP didn't fit into that part of the agenda. Going back to Iran, and what a terrible deal that was. I've written extensively about this, and I wrote one particular essay, called Iran, the worst deal, because you can't have a worse deal than a deal that seeks to prevent something from happening, which has actually already happened. Because in my view, and this is a view that doesn't get an airing on the mainstream media. And I'm so disappointed that even the House Republicans have never had a hearing on it. But Iran probably already has nuclear weapons and missiles to deliver them, and it probably had that capability years before Obama inked the Joint Conference of Plan of Action, the so-called Iran nuclear deal. Years before that, and I'm not alone in this view. Some of our nation's foremost intelligence and technological experts have co-authored articles with me and spoken on this, including my old boss, Dr. Graham, who was President Reagan's White House science advisor, and he ran NASA, and he was chairman of the EMP Commission, and Jim Woolsey, who was the former CIA director, and Fritz Ehrmarth, who was the chairman of the National Intelligence Council under Ronald Reagan, and Ambassador Henry Cooper, who was the director of the Strategic Defense Initiative. And I know that this view is also shared by most Israeli intelligence officials, that Iran actually already has the bomb and has probably had the bomb for many years. And I say this because we know from the International Atomic Energy Agency reports that prior to the year 2003, before the year 2003, Iran had already conducted implosion tests, and it was building, actually manufacturing, bridge wire detonators, and it was also manufacturing neutron initiators. When the United States reached that point during the World War II Manhattan Project and had achieved those technological thresholds, we were only in a few months away from having the atomic bomb. It strains credulity to believe that Iran would have halted its nuclear weapons program in 2003 and not taken the small step forward that was necessary for weaponization and waited for President Obama to come along with his Iran nuclear deal, the JCPOA, it's, and yet there's never been a hearing on this alternative point of view. The mainstream media doesn't generally report on this, even though we've written quite a bit about this. And I really think that if you understand the technology of nuclear weapons, it really defies common sense to argue that, well, Iran is still a year away from the bomb. That is based on some preposterous wishful thinking, given what we know about the technological history of their nuclear weapons program.
Well, this kind of, again, gets back to our intelligence agencies. I mean, do they know this and they aren't saying, or do you think they just don't know?
I wondered if they did know about it, because, you know, the way the Obama administration behaved in the Middle East, they behaved as if they knew that Iran had the bomb, because they were doing everything they could to bend over backwards to make nice with Iran suddenly. And they were also distancing themselves from our traditional allies in the Middle East, like Israel and the United Arab Emirates and Saudi Arabia. Everything we could to try to keep the Iranians happy, and also that would account for the Obama administration wanting to pull us more and more out of the Middle East, which I think we should be doing. I mean, President Trump wants to do that too, but Obama seemed to be contradicted by his idea that, well, we're going to be tough on Iran and stop them from getting the bomb. But he was acting as if they already had it. And he did similar things with North Korea, too. We now know that North Korea had the bomb during Obama's watch. He never admitted it. He didn't want to admit it because he didn't want to take responsibility for North Korea having achieved nuclear missile capabilities that could reach the United States on his watch. And I suspect a similar rationale applied to Iran, that he didn't want to have that big black mark against the history of his administration. So it's possible that they knew, but they've just never wanted to admit it and don't want to admit it today. Just because President Trump is president, by the way, people need to understand President Trump's intelligence community is not his intelligence community.
No.
It's President Obama's intelligence community. You know, he made the huge mistake of making Dan Coats, he's now fired Dan Coats, fortunately. I wrote a series of articles urging him to do that. I don't know if you read any of them, but maybe he just got fed up. But Dan Coats, who I always respected when he was a senator, you know, a conservative senator, he was great at that. But it's a huge mistake to take a long-serving senator and then put them in charge of something like the intelligence community, you know, because they're not intellectually equipped to do battle with the intelligence community and support the president's view. And, you know, Coats went in there and he didn't fire anybody. You know, he basically had the same staff from Obama and he got captured by them.
Mm-hmm.
And to this day, the intelligence community view of the world is Obama's view of the world. They think climate change is an existential threat. They think we should stay in the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action. They think we should stay in Syria. You know, I mean, they have all of the Obama administration points of view on all of these threats. They never mention EMP as a threat, you know? So, you know, President Trump, 3 years into his administration, is not stuck. The buck does stop at the president's office on this. You know, and that's one thing, even though I'm an admirer of President Trump and I support him, I do not understand why he doesn't say you're fired. It's one of the reasons.
I know, and he's really good at that. We thought he'd do a lot of that.
Yeah, he's done it a lot of it among very high-ranking people in the White House. And on occasion, he'll knock off. He did finally get rid of Dan Coats, and he got rid of that incompetent woman who was running the Department of Homeland Security, finally. Okay? But you've got to do more than that. Whenever an administration comes in, you know, the Democrats don't hesitate to replace all the top tier, the senior executive service, but hundreds of people go.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they tender their resignations are accepted, then you bring in your own people. I think, you know, President Trump didn't do that. And so I think he had the mistake because he'd never held an office in Washington.
Yeah, I was curious about that.
But don't you have to drill down? I mean, the top people, absolutely, you need to change and get your own folks in there. But below them is the worker bees. Those are the ones that are, I
grinding
think, at this
away
point,
the policy.
Yeah, really doing all the damage.
Absolutely. And they're given the opportunity to do the damage because you haven't replaced the top guys. Look at that colonel that just testified against President Trump trying to get him impeached. What's he doing in the National Security Council staff? Obviously, you know, he's been rotated there, you know, from the intelligence community to be in that position, probably to do exactly that. Now, if you had your own people in charge, you know, you would start exiling people like that to Siberia. You might not be able to fire them because of the government rules, but at least you could put them in charge of food service in the cafeteria or something.
Right.
And
you'd have somebody who would know that Brennan's mole was on your phone call.
Yeah, right, exactly. And then put your own people, trustworthy people, in. The Democrats always consistently do that. The Republicans always, Bush made the same mistake. You know, Bush tried to go along and get along with the Clinton administration appointees. And you know, Republicans always want, it seems, to be gentlemanly about it and make everything bipartisan and think that if they let these people keep their jobs and that they'll be loyal. And that never works out.
And they'll see the light.
Trump had the idea that that these intelligence community so-called professionals, okay, that being a professional in the intelligence community, the State Department, is the same thing as being a professional in the private sector, like a lawyer, you know? I mean, a lawyer, you can pay him, he'll argue both sides of an argument. Whatever side of the argument you pay him to argue, he'll do it with equal, you know, competence and vigor. But ideology doesn't figure into most of these things in the private sector the way it does in Washington.
Right.
And it's very, these people are professional ideologues for the most part. You know, they're good at advancing an agenda that they have in mind, you know.
And we've kind of seen what not taking that to heart has severe consequences. We're going to take a really quick break. We'll be right back with our guest, Dr. Peter Pry. You are listening to We the People Radio. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
It's electric.
Dark and you want to see, you need a
electricity.
Flip that switch and what do you get? You get a
electricity.
Every room can now be lit with just a
electricity.
Where do you think it all comes from? This powerful
electricity.
That was from Schoolhouse Rock. That's where we should have learned all of that, was way back when we were kids. But for some reason, we're doing a lot of remedial work now as adults. Okay, so we've got you as our hostage for the next hour, Dr. Pry. So how would you like to close out this hour?
Well, as a comment, we were just talking about the corruption of the intelligence community.
Right.
And I think... here's a litmus test I have that everybody can use, even people who are not experts in the intelligence community, to see whether the intelligence community is reformed or not to be supportive of President Trump. And you may recall that during the transition, before President Trump was sworn in, the Obama administration intelligence community had put out an unclassified national intelligence estimate, which is very rare, by the way. You know, usually national intelligence estimates are deeply classified. They're not often put out unclassified, but they put this one out in a big hurry. And you might recall that national intelligence estimate said basically that the Russians got President Trump elected because of collusion with the Russians, or at least that the Russians basically wanted Trump elected over Hillary, and they did all kinds of things that helped him get elected. And it struck at the legitimacy of President Trump's election, and was the basis for the launching of the Mueller investigation, you know, which the Democrats hoped would become their basis for impeaching him. To this day, 3 years into the Trump administration, those national intelligence estimates are still there. They've not been recalled. When Dan Coats, I mean, that's one of the things that made me so angry, at Dan Coats being the director of national intelligence. The first thing he should have done when he came in as the director of national intelligence is recalled those reports. You know, he should have said that, look, the author of these reports, you know, General Clapper, General Brennan, the FBI under Comey, they're so partisan and anti-Trump that intelligence community was so politicized that these national intelligence estimates shouldn't be regarded as credible. And he should have recalled those reports and trash-canned them. At minimum, he should have launched a B-team investigation to say, wait a minute, we're suspending these reports and recalling them so that we can re-examine all the evidence and see if these national intelligence estimates deserve to be out there. But that hasn't happened. You know, those national and I'm amazed that President Trump has tolerated it, that those NIEs are still out there.
What do you think?
Things are going to come back and haunt him in the election, in the 2020 elections. Do you think the Democrats are not going to say, look, President Trump's own intelligence community had 4 years to recall these national intelligence estimates, and they didn't do it? You know, even his own intelligence community agrees that there was hanky-panky going on and corruption, and that his presidency is due to Russian interference in our elections. I mean, that is just so obvious to me that they will do that. But that's a litmus test to look for. Will we ever get a Trump director of national intelligence who will tear those reports up and recall them?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do you think that's just another case of, well, hey, that's what our experts say, we got to go with it, rather than, like you say, get a B team in there and figure out what's really going on? Because at this point, I don't see how he can trust anything that comes out of our national intelligence agencies with all the holdovers. I don't know that he's going to get the true story on much, because they've made it very clear they don't like him.
I agree. And what you said is exactly what happened with Dan Coats. Dan Coats is on the record. I mean, I think he was in some event in Colorado, and he was asked about those national intelligence estimates. And he said something to the effect of what you just said. Well, our intelligence professionals made that judgment, and I have to stand by it.
Yeah.
He should have been fired immediately. But no, you know, President Trump let him stay on. I mean, this man has such patience and loyalty, but it never seems to be reciprocated, you know, or rarely.
Right, mm-hmm. Right. No, I don't know. I don't know how he operates with so many people in the lower levels of his administration that are just fighting him tooth and nail on everything he says, everything he does. I mean, he's getting a lot done. I mean, he's appointing judges, and, you know, he's doing a lot of good things. But I don't think people realize how much we could really get done if he had a team of people behind him carrying out his wishes. I just think we would do amazing things.
Well, and on this particular topic of our electric grid, I don't understand how those people all have friends, neighbors, relatives, and some of them live in other parts of the country. If everything goes down the drain, you'd think that just a decent sense of self-preservation would get him in the game on this particular topic. This isn't really a left-right issue. Well, it is, I guess, if you look at the green power thing.
Yeah, it shouldn't be, but we have become such a polarized society that almost everything is a left-right issue, unfortunately.
Oh, yeah.
You think they honestly believe that if they're, you know, like the thing in California, if only we had, you know, solar and more wind. You know, I got to tell you, the day that the wind was blowing up a rip, it was the first time that they had shut the power off. I was driving up Interstate 5, and I look over, and there's a windmill that's, I don't know, 7,000 feet tall at the Walmart distribution center, and that thing is usually turning. Here's the day with free wind for everyone, and it's not moving an inch.
Well, these, ironically, the solutions that the green energy agenda has will actually make our vulnerability worse. Over the summer, for example, we could also see our future, if they have their way, looking to what happened in the United Kingdom, in England. There was a massive nationwide blackout in Britain, not caused by an EMP or cyber attack, but it was caused because England has been building windmills. And the grid, the grid was never designed to accommodate, you know, these alternative sources of energy feeding in. And so it makes, it adds another layer of technological complexity to a system that's already technologically complex and increases more pathways for failure. And that's exactly what happened. There were a couple of wind glitches in a couple of the windmills, and it basically caught, it tripped a couple, some of the major generators and put all of Britain into blackout for about 12 hours. And, the normally staid British people were having to go to the bathroom out of train windows because there were hundreds of thousands of people stranded all over the country in electric trains, you know, that couldn't get home. Elevators wouldn't work. All the usual crises, you know, all kinds of emergency problems. And that's our future.
Sure.
If we go forward with the green craziness. Not only don't those things really work as a practical means of energy, but they make the existing grid more vulnerable to failure. And, of course, they will make it more vulnerable to attack, too, because those pathways, those additional pathways, can be exploited by the enemy to bring down our national grid and kill potentially millions of people.
Yeah. Well, our fixation with electric cars, that takes all the fun out of it when you can't charge the thing. I mean, you have some of these cars that are 100% electric, so you've got to go spend hours sitting at some random location. I guess you have to pay for the parking space, too.
Where does the electricity come from?
Yeah, well, that's the funny part. They think they just go park there and it's all good.
It has to be manufactured in some way.
Right.
And then what do you do with those batteries? Talk about environmental problems. Eventually, those batteries have to be replaced and disposed of.
Right.
And, it's not quite as bad as trying to get rid of nuclear waste, okay? But trying to find a place to safely dispose of a lithium battery is a serious problem. Those things are potentially like bombs that you've got to get rid of. But you had asked the original question, excellent question, do I think these people really believe this? AOC, for example,
We are unfortunately in the last, 20 seconds here of our final minutes here with you. And we'll come back in the next hour.
And we'll pick this right back up again.
It's like we
Lots
were never gone.
About.
Join us. We're at WeThePeopleRadio.us.